This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, hello. This one is crazy. Great crack. John McAfee is something else, man. I don't know. I've heard him on a lot of different other podcasts, and it was high octane. This one, I barely kept my pants on. This was fucking crazy, man. I don't know what time it was local for John. It was midday for me, and the shit had already got wild. We talked about all his history, talked about the world, what's happening now. Corona, all that stuff. But this is a short and sweet one. John's a busy man and he had other appointments and other people to go and talk to. So we get about the average 30, 40 minutes, something into this. It's probably one of those conspiracy guys shortest shows. But John very graciously agreed to come on the show. And I'm sure there's other stuff we can talk about if we ever get to meet him again. You know, I know what not to ask. But we had good crack and I hope you enjoyed this interview. You can go and watch this video on the Vimeo channel for those conspiracy guys. It's been streamed to Patreon people first. So this was streamed live at the time of recording to Patreon people through Vimeo. I'm going to be hosting all of the live shows on Vimeo. I don't know if they'll be on BitChute. Because they're big, they're long files. So I don't want to fucking cripple BitChute with like 70 gig video files. But Vimeo is there to host all of that stuff. And you can get all that stuff real early. Go to patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys. You're supporting the show. You're helping keep me in the podcast game. Doing these interviews. Making these shows. TCG Towers is ripe. Ready to be impregnated with a whole season's worth of new guests. New topics. I am here with itchy fingers and quivering lips. Ready to lay it down for season 8. With some awesome episode topics and great crack, great banter, great guests. We're doing these interviews. I'm really enjoying them. They'll be going on into the future. And I hope you enjoy this one. It's short and sweet and fucking bananas. And thanks to John McAfee for joining me on the show. Okay, lads. John McAfee interview. Here we go.
Hitler, Roswell, JFK. Cryptozoology and NSA. Global warming.
Hello and welcome to another of those conspiracy guys. This time, through the mire of technical difficulties, we have joining us the outlaw himself, John McAfee, all the way from a secret location somewhere out there in the wilderness. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And for those out there in the listening audience, we have had 9 minutes of a lot of fun where technical difficulties delayed us. For at least 8.5 minutes. So finally, I said, listen, I want to sing. 30 seconds of singing, and let me tell you, all the technical fucking difficulties evaporated, did they not?
It was magical tones. John, I watched some great documentaries. We're going to talk about a little bit about your past, a little bit about the present, and a little bit what you think about the future today. I watched the documentary. I've been told you didn't see it. Gringo. The John McAfee story. I put it to you straight.
I've never seen it.
I think it feels to me a bit like propaganda, a bit like a man who has got too close to the answers and they scrounge up some shit to try and maybe sully your name.
your time in Belize was, let's say, eventful. For those of you who want to go and watch the documentary, you'll find out some stuff. But you're like technically like on the run from many different governments. Tell us, like, what's that been like? What's the stress of that whole thing in Belize? Like, is it out of your system? Are you finished?
I'm certainly not on the run from anything from Belize. I was never charged with anything.
No evidence,
never
nothing.
Suspected of anything. Mm. Nothing. Okay. It's all a mainstream media dream, which is fine with me. I mean, listen, there is no such thing as bad publicity. I've never seen Gringo, and the reason is I don't have the time.
Yeah, man.
I mean, people, I live in my shoes. Do you think watching 2.5 hours of a documentary is going to in any way augment my understanding of myself? I don't think so.
Well, that's the thing. It seems to be the premier exploration of you and your character for a lot of people when they see, you know, John McAfee, who was those green screen videos of you doing bath salts before the election in 2016. Is like, oh, goddamn, this guy is crazy. And then this documentary comes out and kind of cements that propaganda.
I'm not denying that I might be crazy, please God. Under no circumstances would I challenge that assertion. However, a new movie is coming out next year starring Michael Keaton.
Yes.
With co-starring as Zac Efron. Michael Keaton will be playing me, Zac Efron playing that very unfortunate reporter who I agreed could spend 2 weeks living with me. Now, the poor bastard, if you know anything about this story, unraveled during that.
Yeah, this is the Wired magazine reporter, is it?
Yes. No, fuck me, he unraveled.
I mean, you brought him on a Hunter S. Thompson type of a journey and he wasn't able.
Listen, you know, you should know better. You want to send a fucking reporter to live with me for 2 goddamn weeks? And I say, oh, yeah, bring that on. I mean, what do you fucking think will happen to that fucking... He unraveled. But anyway, so this movie is about just 2 weeks of my life living with this reporter. Let me explain. I gave him an opportunity to be a human being. I mean, the first 8 hours he was with me, I was totally free. And it became clear he was an idiot like all mainstream media. And so I go, hey, all right, then. You want to report on me? I'm going to fuck with you. On the second day, we were sitting at this massive round table in my estate in San Pedro. I'm always armed, people, always. Also, anybody who knows me knows that I am one of the greatest sleight of hand specialists on this fucking planet. So I'm talking to Josh, the writer of the story, and also the screenwriter of this movie. I'm talking. He's asking about the interior. I've got a compound in the jungle in Orange, the only white man in a district of 15,000 black people. They called me El Gringo, El Hombre Blanco, the white man. That was my name. Mm. They did not say it out of cruelty. No, that's how they do. I mean, you're fat. You don't have the name Gordo.
That's my name, and I live up to it.
I'm right in Gordo. Nothing.
El Gordo. See,
makes sense.
Yeah.
Have you seen the fat guy? Oh, the fat guy. Yeah. He was here. Have you seen the white man? The white man. Duh.
But were you not kind of like the king of Belize at a small like a small time, you were employing a lot of people, you had an entourage of 25 security guards, maybe you traveled anywhere, you were employing ex-cons.
I employed a few thousand people. I had 50 security guards. So fucking what? In any case, no, the second day, Josh Davis is sitting across the table. I'm always on. I'm talking to him about the interior. I'm going, so here's the issue, Josh. In Orange Walking, and when I'm talking, I reach in to my shoulder holster and pull out my 38 Special. Right? While I'm talking, I unchamber and drop all six shells on the table. Skip a fucking beat. Not a fucking beat. So I'm going, yeah. So here's the problem in Orange Walk, Josh. In Orange Walk, so I'm taking a bullet, putting it back in. I spin the cylinder, close it, put it to my head, and pull the fucking trigger. Josh jumps up from the table, runs, slams his back against the wall. No, you don't have to do this. He's freaking out. I go, do what, Josh? Click. Now I open it, spin the chamber, close it. Click. What are you talking about? Click. Stop. Stop. I'm sorry. Obviously, there's no goddamn bullet that's real.
Yeah, you palmed it, right?
Well, actually, here's what I do sometimes. I always carry a bullet that has been expended. Boom. I take a bullet from another real cartridge that's primed, put it in this one, which is expended, meaning the cap cannot even fire. Mm. Nothing. There's no powder. It looks exactly like a bullet. So that's what's in my gun.
Why do you love fucking with mainstream media so much? I see, like, in your early career, you came out with what I would guess is maybe like a smoke and mirrors, a kind of a boogeyman story about, like, computer viruses. Do you think maybe you talking about computer viruses in your early career propelled a lot of people to maybe make them, that it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that you making such a huge industry on one side?
No, that actually did not ever happen. There were at least 20 viruses every day being written by thousands of people in the world. God knows why. Why do people want to fuck with the world? I don't know. Some people do. Taggers in subway stations that, you know, will take spray paint and fuck with everything. I don't know why. I never once fucked with the media over virus. I didn't need to. I didn't need to write a virus. I didn't need to propagate one. I didn't need to promote one. Fuck me.
Was there a culture, though, of, like, creating, like, the virus to get the attention of somebody like yourself who was employing programmers to combat this, where they were, like, kind of vying for your attention?
That's what it was all about. It was a contest between me, because there were no other companies, and 1,000 virus writers out there, all of them going, we're going to make one that's going to get by that he cannot detect. Mm. Well, that didn't happen for 9 months until the whale virus came out, the first encrypted virus. Fuck me. That was harsh. It took us 2 weeks, 24 hours a day, my entire team, to finally figure out how to detect and eradicate that motherfucker. But no, good God almighty, we didn't do shit. There were thousands of people doing it for us. We just reacted. We just built the programs. So no, that's absolutely false. Never have I ever fucked with the media over the reality or non-such of computer viruses.
You didn't need to.
I didn't need to, but everything else, fuck yes.
What were the early days in McAfee like? From what I've seen from the Vice documentary and from other online videos, it seems like a kind of a computer virus Wolf of Wall Street type situation. Was it crazy debauchery, like great crack?
No, there was no debauchery. There's no drugs, I promise you.
Yeah, that's all manufactured.
That's all manufactured shit. There was hard work. I slept at a max 6 hours a day, sometimes 4. Mm. So did my team. We were up constantly. We lived in the office. We slept in the fucking office. Our wives and girlfriends brought us food. Wow. In the fucking office. It was intense.
Dedicated we shit, just, like.
We just stuck to it. When a new virus came out, we all, as a team, sat down, disassembled it, looked at it, and either went, fuck me, how do we do with this one? Like with the whale, the first encrypted, we all just, fuck me, now, what the fuck? So I took the whale virus, the first encrypted virus, into my office for 2 fucking days, didn't sleep. I just looked at it, disassembled it, ran it, infected programs with it, looked at the fucking infected programs. And after 48 hours, I go, okay, guys, here's how we identify it, and here's how we kill it. Wow. And it worked.
Why then do you think these documentarians now in, like, you know, the 21st century are rewriting or, like, reimagining your history? They're retconning your older days to make it seem like it was an eventuality that you'd end up in the situations they're painting you in today. Like, why are you so important?
In your own opinion. It's a better story, isn't it? If I'm an evil, dark, black villain, is that not a better story? And is that not what the press wants, surely?
To what end, though, John? Like, what have you got? I'm going to ask you, like, a little bit about QAnon and a little bit about what's going on there with the coronavirus and stuff. But, like, to what end? You know, we know that the stuff that you were claiming in the late 80s and early 90s, you were looking forward and saying, this shit is not going to get better. It's going to get more sophisticated. And the more sophisticated the platforms become, the operating systems become, the more sophisticated and dependent humanity becomes on them, which makes the hackers that much more dangerous. And then Snowden comes out in 2011 and says, everything's being watched at all times. And you were like,
everything, people, every fucking thing. If you own a smartphone, which I don't,
yeah,
my wife doesn't, we can never, ever own a phone again. Because if we did, we would be picked up.
Sure.
In 24 hours, we know this.
Just switch on the microphones to hear all your conversations.
Yes. You cannot turn it off. You think you can just press a button and the phone goes off? No, it looks like it. It acts like it. Oh, it's off. Bull.
When you disembarked from, like, seemingly disembarked from the tech world in 2000, it seemed like a really strange decision for you. I know you were probably, what would you call it? Like, it was a hostile takeover of McAfee, and you were Steve Jobs out of your position. Why didn't you try to get back into tech? You kind of took the L and said, okay, I'm going to try some other shit. When tech was becoming and the internet was becoming so ubiquitous in society, like, you bounced and then you came back 16 years later when everything was super advanced and went like, okay, I'm back, bitches. What forced that sabbatical?
I never got out of it. Listen, I...
But front lines, stuff. Like,
all I did is I just walked away from Acre. It's too goddamn big.
Yeah.
5,000 people. I'm no longer enjoying that shit.
Yeah.
I spent my time dealing with stockholders, board of directors meetings, personnel issues. I'm not cut out for that. I just walked away.
So the fun was gone from it. You liked staying up for 2 days and figuring out shit, and they put you in a position where you were an office monkey kind of thing, is it?
Listen, I don't do well as an office monkey. I left. I still owned it. When I sold it, finally, I sold it to Intel for $7.8 billion fucking dollars, and I had not been in the office in 15 fucking years. Okay, that's how I work. But right after McAfee, I started Zone Labs, which we sold to Checkpoint Systems 11 months later for $400 million. Now, that was a quick thing. After that, I started Tribal Voice. Man, didn't do too well on that. We sold it to MCGI for 17 million.
That was all the advent of social media stuff, like you were trying to
that was the very first social media application.
Yeah.
That we got 17 million for. Why? Listen, the bandwidth simply was not there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was all.
It was before your time. It was before it was, the time it was supposed to. Yeah, yeah.
Came time. We didn't have the goddamn bandwidth. T1 lines was the max that we could get. So no. But 17 mil still, yeah, for 8 months worth of work. It's not bad.
When you were making Tribe of Voice, did you think that, or did you even imagine at the time that social media would become so ubiquitous and so like dystopian that we would be like monitoring every movement we make and voluntarily giving that information?
Never fucking occurred to me. We developed the very first instant messaging system.
Yeah.
Everybody loved it.
Trillion. But it was starting to turn into trillion. What had you got in your mind? It was just like, here's a fun thing. People want to talk to each other. Like,
why not?
Why not? But could you have imagined that it became so Orwellian?
When we got 250,000 users, it collapsed. It collapsed. We did not have the bandwidth. The world did not have the bandwidth to support more than 250,000 people.
That shit scaled up quick. Like,
tell them all about it, those conspiracy guys.
So where did it turn? Where did it all turn dark? Like, Facebook has that kind of overarching lizard people, Illuminati kind of reputation. But we know from your story that, you know, the mainstream reputation isn't really the real true tale. Where did it turn dark? Like, why are we still on all that stuff when almost 10 years ago Snowden is like, they can fucking read your dreams? Like, why do humans need that thing, do you think?
Two reasons. Number one, laziness. People have become lazy. It's easier to have someone else think for you, decide for you, judge for you what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad, what's in your fucking interest, and what's not. Listen, even me at my advanced age, if someone could actually convince me, listen, John, you don't need to think anymore. We have your best interest at heart. Well, I would only believe it if they charge me $100 million a year. And I go, oh, maybe you do then. But what, for free? For fucking free? No.
If it's free, you are the product, right?
Yeah, yes, you are the product or you are the victim. What's the difference?
It's kind of like a social silent green that people are willing to throw themselves into the machine to keep the machine going.
You want to get eaten?
Yeah.
Okay. That's easy for free. Anybody will do that for free.
But why do you think it's a human necessity? Laziness and connection? Is it that they want to feel connected, or?
No, I wish it were. I wish it was that simple.
That's what it's sold as.
No, I know, but it's not. Mm. It's fear, and it's fear of the following. We all, my friend, are afraid of thinking the wrong thoughts, making the wrong decisions. Because if we're responsible for thinking for ourselves and making decisions for ourselves, then if it's the wrong fucking decision, whose fault is it? Well, it's mine.
Yeah.
But if I can say, well, so-and-so was smart there, an official, and authority, do you understand? Authority, something you can believe in, which is higher than you, and therefore smarter than you, and therefore more capable of making decisions than you. Then if there's a fucking problem, if it goes wrong, is it your fault? Nope. His fault. Do you see?
Yeah.
we are afraid of taking responsibility for ourselves. And this, my friend, is the fucking problem.
Yeah, I mean, a personal responsibility, like you're a libertarian yourself, and you that's part of your ethos, is like everyone does for themselves, but also, you know, you kind of have to, if you shit the bed, you kind of have to own it as well.
It's your bed.
It's your bed, and it's your shit.
You must fucking clean it yourself.
But like now, I think there's a certain, with the COVID-19 crisis and all this kind of stuff, it is a test of how, of those two things you talked about, of the laziness and of the abdication of responsibility. There are people who are out protesting it, saying it's fake. David Icke is getting kicked off of YouTube and Twitter and all sorts of stuff. The English government and Ofcom, the Office of Communications, have made a law that you're not allowed to link 5G technology with, you know, coronavirus. It's a legal mandate that you can't do. It's like against free speech. Crazy, right? And I mean, not that I subscribe to any of that stuff, but the possibility to be able to talk about it has been removed. What do you think in the kind of the framework of what we're talking about, where people are allowing authority to make decisions for them, be it in real life or on the internet, how is the current situation going to be remedied in your opinion? If we can't get over that stuff online, how are we going to get over it in real life?
Wish that I had the capacity, both in reasoning and in every other way, to answer that question. But fuck me, I do not.
You think that people?
I'm as mystified as you.
I could never have thought that the whole human race would just go, yeah, okay, we'll just stay inside. Like, I never would have thought that would happen.
Yes, but we did. Did we not?
Yeah.
Did the human race not just stay inside and habituated to it? Listen, I can tell you this much. We are in Spain. We got fucking stuck here. We came to visit friends the day before lockdown. Sure. There is no country in this fucking world that had a more severe lockdown. So for 2 fucking months, if we walked outside our door, be arrested. Do you understand?
Yeah.
That's severe.
It's crazy.
That's severe.
Yeah.
So here we are. Now, we just got out. We just got out. And praise God, in 6 hours, we are going to be home to a country that's actually reasonable with leaders that have a brain that did not go into lockdown. I'm just saying.
Yeah, there's countries like Sweden and stuff like that that had a less austere attitude towards corona, and they ended up keeping the bars open. People still had their jobs. Their economy is not going to tank as hard.
How less austere can you be then? Yeah. We got no rules. Do what you want. Japan. Mm. Japan has fewer deaths per population than any fucking country in this world. And they did not lock down, and they got the virus before anybody. And
so what do you think is going on?
Say that, oh, well, Japan is not reporting correctly. Fuck me. Do you know the Japanese people? Do you think?
They're pretty strict on that shit.
Any fucking nation on the goddamn planet, you're going to tell the truth, it's going to be the Japanese. Why? It's just what they do. So, no lockdown, lowest death, and the most crowded goddamn country in the world. In Tokyo, I've been there multiple times. Try taking a subway in Tokyo.
they have to put you on with big canoe oars.
Push people on. We can get another person on here. I know we can. Push. I'm serious, people. Yes, in any country in the world.
What do you think is the big answer? What do you think it's happening for then? Is it if it's not a disease, if it's not a true pandemic, what is it and why?
And in fact, please, people, it just killed 264,000 people in 5 goddamn months. in a population of the world, 7.8 fucking billion.
The argument is, though, that because we all socially distanced, that it stopped the spread of it. So there's like, we won't know what would have happened if we did nothing.
Down. Two-thirds did not lock down. How do you account for that?
Yeah.
Japan, Sweden, they didn't lock down? Please, fuck me, no. No. It's like the media goes, oh, my God, 250,000 people have died. Let's look at that in relationship to the world population. Why don't they say, listen, 1 out of every 100,000 people are going to die. I mean, what would we say? Are you kidding me? Fuck you. Get real. No, they didn't say that. 250,000. Horror, horror.
I heard you say on another podcast during the week that more people die every year from diarrhea.
2.5 million. Look it up in Google, if you wish. Best year. 2.5 from pathogenic diarrhea, which you get from what? Touching somebody who has that virus. 2.5 fucking million? 10 times the number of people who fucking died from coronavirus in a world that was not shut down. Only the stupid countries shut down. America, Spain, Italy, England, Austria, Germany, and France, among a few other stupid countries. What do the smart countries do? Sweden, Japan, even China. Do you think China didn't shut the fuck down?
Temporarily. And then they were one of the first to open back up again when it's all shook.
Let's tell the truth.
Yeah.
They shut two fucking cities that accounted for 1% of the Chinese population. The remainder of China was totally fucking unaffected. And even those two cities opened up prior to everybody else shutting down. Now,
I couldn't understand why Wuhan was allowed to shut down and all of the infected people were there, but Beijing didn't really shut down, and it's only kind of up the road, not up the road, but close by. And they had like way less than the population density would have said would be infected. Well,
who could have benefited from this entire thing. The GDP of every country on Earth has decreased from 10 to 20%, with one exception, China. It's increased.
You think 15%. this was biological warfare for stock market prices?
Just wake the fuck up. China shut down. They continue to build their goods, their war machines, their tanks, their planes, their bombs.
crash the petrodollar and make the dollar worthless, and then continue to sell oil from Iran.
Yes,
using Iran. Yeah,
China is going to be the number one power in the world as a result of this. Now, do you not understand? Now, if I were a conspiracy theorist, I would go, "Oh, we have another wave coming." Because what happened from coronavirus? It's a nothing. We know it's a fucking 250,000 people in the entire fucking world. 10 times as many died from diarrhea people. 3 times as many died from the flu. And you can't say, well, more would have died if we hadn't locked down. Are you fucking crazy? 2/3 of the world refused to lock down, including some of the most populous countries in the world, who experienced, by the way, the fewest deaths. So no, the world that did not lock down didn't experience a problem. It's the world that did lock down that experienced the problem. That's a minority of the world. Well, people, you have been fucked in the ass by the Chinese. Not that they built this virus. Who gives a fucking... Listen... China is obviously going to be the population from which new viruses arise. It's the most densely populated country on our planet. 2 fucking billion people, of course. All new viruses are going to come from the Chinese. They don't have to make these fuckers, of course not. What happens with most of these viruses, like this one, we have studies from Oxford, from Stanford, saying probably 3/4 of the world has already been infected by it, which is what happens with all new viruses. You all get infected, every fucking one. 99.999% of the population of the world has no fucking symptoms. That's what happened with this. A tiny, tiny minority gets violently ill, and an even tinier dies, like the flu every year. 600 fucking thousand people die from the flu.
But there seems to be some kind of a international, I guess, conspiracy or collaboration to fudge the numbers. They're changing up death certificates, so people dying from one certain disease, they're adding tagging corona on just to bump the numbers. But like, what's the end game? Like, in that, maybe here's the Western powers are not letting a good crisis go to waste. They're using it to put in stuff like Bill Gates and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, putting in ID 2020, tagging everybody with RFID chips, and all of these kind of dystopian rumors are happening. Someone's trying to figure out why it would happen this way. Like, do you know why? You obviously had dealings with Bill Gates back in the day. Is he a eugenicist?
No. Let me. I wish it were that simple, but it's even simpler. What happened is the Chinese go very fucking clever. Every year, at least 100 new viruses that kill people come from China. Why? It's the most densely populated country. Of course, it's going to start there. And we pay no attention. The Chinese go, well, let me see. Someone in the Chinese government said, I'm going to bet you 1 yen that I can make America and Europe and everybody locked down. Let me see. And so they go, all right, I'll take that bet. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to lock down one of our least significant cities, Wuhan, with a population less than 0.25% of all of China. Let's lock down that city. Then we're going to say, oh, my God, oh, fuck me. We're so sorry. I don't know how this happened, but this new virus, oh, my God, and it's escaped. We have to tell the world.
Like yelling fire in a crowded theater, right?
Yes, I wish they did. No, they knew this virus is going to be less deadly than the flu, and it is. It turns out to be about 1/4 as deadly as the flu. So it ain't no big deal, literally. I mean, it kills 250,000 people. Do you realize that 60 million fucking people a year die? Can we get real, please? So they realize it's nothing. 250,000 people might die, maybe 500,000, nothing. But we're going to say, oh, we're so sorry. It's escaped. We don't know what to do here. And it's deadly. Well, fuck me. What did the rest of the world do? Panicked, locked down, and China locked down nothing, continued producing goods and services. Now, why do the governments want to now increase numbers? Because imagine now, England, which they say has a terrific problem, which fewer than 50,000 people have died in a population of 127 million. What are they going to do? Oh, my God, nobody's dying. We've got to expand our numbers because we're going to look like idiots locking down our country and destroying the world's economy. For what? Nothing? Nothing? Well, we're going to get voted out, people. So there better goddamn well be something.
So you think it's a political ego game?
No, it's not ego. It's political power. We need to stay in power. End of story.
But they're afraid of looking foolish for pulling, like pressing the big red button because China made them look like dum-dums.
For what? For nothing? Fuck you. All right, that's what's going to happen. So there better be something that you press that goddamn button for. It's as simple as apple pie, my friend.
So the American system, like the westernized system, including Europe and the UK and stuff like that, but the American system particularly are focusing on like setting up these future plans for control, for apps that will monitor our movement and connection, so to be able to trace contact back to infected people. Like these are, it seems like a kind of a medical Patriot Act that's happening now, where they've created a, they've created a crisis, and then they're going to create this Hegelian, you know, reaction and then a solution.
In measure
That will never go away. A constitutional alteration that will never go away.
In measure to counter a non-existing threat. Now, so, are you going to buy this or not, people? I'm not. I'm going to fucking speak out. I am. Now, you need to, too. My friend, we've gone over time. We have time for one more question. I have another interview.
Okay. Do you know anything about Q or QAnon, the secret cabal behind... you don't know anything about it?
Nothing. I'm sorry. I mean, obviously, I've read it. But please, I don't know the man. I don't know anything about the reality or non reality of such an entity.
You don't think there's a secret swamp draining happening in the backgrounds with the FBI, the FISA warrants, and Obamagate, and all this stuff? You're not into it?
I wish the fuck there was. I really do.
Yeah.
Would not that be fucking awesome?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. And one more very quick question, John. What do you think then of Bill Gates? Is he a eugenicist? Is he trying to tag us all in, you know, install Office 365 in all our brains? Is that actually happening, or is he just making good on a crisis to make a few bob?
You know, I don't know. I've only met the man one time. That was in 1984. How long ago?
Yeah.
Once. I know nothing about him. I do know this, that he ran one of the largest companies in the world, and as such, he will have learned that whatever fucking plans you may have, you had goddamn well better keep them to yourself.
Mm.
And nobody, no, and especially not your competitors, because they will sideline you.
You don't think he'll have us all tagged? You don't think he'll have us all tagged with RFID chips?
I fucking know. See, what I'm saying is, if you think you know, I promise you, you don't.
Okay.
But he says publicly, it's a lie. It has to be. He's not a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
He may have planned you and I, my friend, nor anybody else, will have a fucking clue. So whatever is happening now, if you think you know something, I promise you it's a goddamn smokescreen. Whatever he does have planned, it ain't what he is saying publicly. Please, God, we are smart enough to know that.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever it is, he's got planned. Whoa. It will probably be.
I'll take your word for it.
A
thousand times worse. The unknown unknown is always the one that gets you.
I'm just saying. And thank you so much. Sorry I couldn't stay longer.
That's all right. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And I guess good luck in your future endeavors and getting home and all that crack.
Thank you. We're getting home soon.
Hopefully so. All right. Stay safe, John. Thanks very much to Janice as well for hooking all this up.
I will.
Thank you, sir. That's it, ladies and jelly babies. That was John McAfee. Fucking hell, you could... I don't know, you could talk for a long time about all the stuff that he knows. It seems to have washed over me. I'm like, oh shit, what do you say? What do you ask? He's deeply rooted in that whole environment, in that whole industry. And yet, I still feel there's some things that he can't say somehow. Go and watch the Gringo documentary. I feel it's propaganda trying to sully the man's name. If it's not, I don't know why he's not arrested already. He can't be on the run for that long and stay clean as a whistle and not get busted. Like, there's fucking lads arrested over less. But it was good to talk to him. I think at the start he said he was just going to finish off what was left of the bottle of Jameson. But somebody had to get to the bottom of that bottle first. So maybe there was a few a few scoops in the morning before this happened. It was a rollover. But yeah, thanks for listening. If you want to know more, I guess you can go to the website, thoseconspiracyguys.com. This was streamed live to Patreon. So patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys. I'm going to be doing all these interviews and stuff over the coming weeks. I have some interviews lined up for later on this week and early next week. So if you want to get in on those, watch them live, like all of these people here, hit up the Patreon, patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys, and you can watch live with me. All of these we say is thanks very much. And I've been Gordo, and see you next time. Bye.